It is Friday, May 26, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, climate change is among the most contentious issues at the G7 summit in Italy. A Republican who's accused of attacking a reporter wins a congressional race in Montana.
Threats, whether they're verbal and rhetorical, against journalists have a real impact.
And country music stars express their sympathy toward the victims of the Manchester bombing. It's all ahead. At the Group of Seven, G7 summit in Sicily, climate change is emerging as among the most contentious items. The G7 has repeatedly recognized the threat of climate change. Leaders hope to persuade U.S. President Donald Trump to honor Washington's commitment to cut greenhouse gas emissions under the Paris Agreement signed 2 years ago. I spoke with White House correspondent Steve Herman, who's traveling with the president.
It is an issue very important to many of the European nations, if not to the Trump administration. Gary Cohen, who is the chief economic advisor to the president, briefing on Air Force One as the plane left Belgium to come over back to Italy, to Sicily here, said that there will be, quote, fairly robust talks on whether the Trump administration should honor the commitment that was made by the United States to cut greenhouse gas emissions under the Paris Agreement signed 2 years ago.
Well, now, during his campaign, Mr. Trump, he referred to global warming as a hoax. I mean, do the European leaders perhaps hope to somewhat change his mind about this?
Oh, they absolutely hope to change his mind. And we're getting indications that the president at least is willing to give a fair hearing to them, to listen to what they have to say, that he's not closed-minded on this. And he has shifted, of course, during the campaign. He said NATO was obsolete. Then at a news conference alongside the NATO Secretary General in the White House, he said NATO is no longer obsolete because it has a role to play in terrorism. And he showed up at the inauguration of the new NATO headquarters yesterday. So some of that campaign rhetoric has softened, and there is a possibility, since this is already de facto, similar to pulling out of NAFTA, he's softened, taken a temporary pause on doing that. So we could just see that there's no action taken to abandon the Paris Agreement in the immediate future.
Well, on the sidelines of the summit, President Trump is holding meetings with one-on-one meetings with leaders, among them British Prime Minister Theresa May. Now, there has been tension between the two countries in the last few days because the British have been upset about reported leaks that have been made by U.S. officials to the news media. What is known about the meeting between Mr. Trump and Mrs. May?
Well, both governments have confirmed that there is going to be a meeting. It's not considered a formally arranged, pre-scheduled bilateral discussion, but I would have been surprised if the leaders of these two countries, which are very, very tight, longtime allies, did not have some sort of discussion while they're at the G7. Obviously, terrorism on the agenda, and obviously, President Trump is going to explain to the British Prime Minister in person that he's going to get to the bottom of whoever was leaking this UK intelligence information about the Manchester bombings to the U.S. media.
Well, also, Mr. Trump had a meeting with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, and they discussed North Korea.
Right. The president said that there would be a particular focus on the North Korean problem at this G7 summit, referring to North Korea's nuclear weapons testing, ballistic missile development. He said, quote, it's a big problem. It's a world problem. It will be solved at some point. It will be solved. You can bet on that. Very emphatic. And those are words of encouragement to the Japanese prime minister, who would like to see a tougher stance because Japan really faces as much of a threat from these North Korean weapons of mass destruction as would South Korea or possibly some of the U.S. bases in the region.
White House correspondent Steve Herman reporting from Sicily. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
You know, I don't know if we would have thought that however many months after, six, 7 months after the election, we'd still be talking about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Certainly about Donald Trump as president, but we're talking about the two of them today, months later. And we'll start with Donald Trump there in Europe for the G7 meeting and the NATO summit. Not getting the attention that he would like out of this trip, I would think, reportedly saying that Germans are evil, something that's not sitting well with Germans on social media. Now, apparently he was referring to German car sales in the U.S., saying that Germany has not been fair with trade deals, with exports, things like that. But those comments being taken across social media as an attack on the German people, and they're not happy with that. And then a moment with French President Emmanuel Macron where he's shaking hands with President Trump and gives him a run for his money with the handshake, kind of lingers and grips his hand.
We've heard this before, too.
Yes, the handshake is one of the things that President Trump has shown as kind of a power move that he's used when he's worked with and met with foreign leaders. So a little bit of that from Emmanuel Macron in that video going around social media. But Trump spinning this and talking about the positives, tweeting out that he arrived in Italy for the G7. He says the trip has been very successful. We made and saved the USA many billions of dollars and millions of jobs. And then tweeting that he's going to engage G7 leaders on many issues, including economic growth, terrorism, and security. And those two issues have been the ones I think that his base has been the most receptive to, have been the economy and terrorism. So not a coincidence that he mentions those two issues where he's tried to get some traction. And then we have Hillary Clinton giving the commencement address today at Wellesley College, her alma mater, telling the graduates there, don't be afraid of your ambition, break glass ceilings. A lot of these quotes going around on social media. But then some of the barbs, not so thinly veiled barbs thrown at President Trump, saying that her first speech when she was a student there 48 years ago came amid a presidency that was ending in disgrace and impeachment. And she did tell the graduates, a lot of people retweeting this line, things didn't quite go the way I planned in the election, but you know what? I'm okay. So lots of people saying, that's good. If she can be okay after losing that election, then anyone can face anything.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The United Nations decries Syrian civilian casualties in airstrikes. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the U.S. takes full responsibility for intelligence leaks after the Manchester bombing. Coalition airstrikes kill three senior Islamic State leaders, and the U.S. economy grows slowly but at a faster pace than first thought. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA. This is International Edition. More than two dozen Coptic Christian pilgrims traveling to a monastery in the south of Egypt were killed Friday when suspected Islamic militants opened fire on a stopped passenger bus. Coptic sources say that many of the passengers were women and children, as Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Women wailed as family members of the victims gathered outside the Magaga hospital in the southern Egyptian town of Minya, close to where the terror attack took place Friday morning. Egyptian media said the victims were pilgrims who were on a journey to the monastery of the Prophet Samuel, revered and visited by Coptic Christians across Egypt. A woman survivor told Egyptian TV from her hospital bed that the group's bus was ambushed by terrorists. She says that their bus was carrying around 40 pilgrims and that they were attacked by a group of armed men. Video on Egyptian media showed a passenger bus which appeared to have its windows blown out by gunfire. Coptic sources said the masked gunmen opened fire at the bus at close range after forcing it to come to a stop. Other sources claimed that the gunmen entered the bus seeking to kill survivors. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi called an emergency meeting of his security cabinet immediately after reports of the attack. Sisi recently denounced Islamic terror groups and those that support them during a summit in the Saudi capital of Riyadh, attended by U.S. President Donald Trump and leaders of close to 50 other Arab and Islamic states. Coptic Christians have been targeted in a number of recent terror attacks across Egypt, including two suicide attacks on Coptic churches in the Nile Delta town of Tanta and the port city of Alexandria. Nearly 50 people were killed in those attacks. A suicide bomber also blew himself up in the main Coptic Christian Cathedral of St. Mark's in Cairo last December. Terrorists in the Sinai Peninsula have systematically targeted Christians in the port town of Arish, killing them with gunshots and in some cases burning their bodies. Many Copts have fled the Sinai for towns on the other side of the Suez Canal. Terror researcher Maher Feghali told Egyptian TV that the attackers were probably from the group calling itself Beit al-Maqdis, now describing itself an affiliate of the Islamic State group, which he says has supporters in the Sinai as well as the region of Minya, where the Friday attack took place. He says that terrorists with ties to the Muslim Brotherhood usually attack only Egyptian police and security forces, while terrorists belonging to the so-called Beit al-Maqdis group have frequently attacked Coptic Christians. He adds that these terrorists have bases in both the Sinai and in the south of Libya. He says they use little-traveled desert roads to go back and forth between the area around Minya where the attack took place. Terrorists in the same region also targeted Coptic Christians during an Islamic insurgency during the 1990s. Islamic terror groups have been trying to foment the sectarian conflict between Muslims and Christians, so far without success. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Republican candidate for a U.S. congressional seat in Montana, who was charged with assault after he allegedly grabbed a reporter by the neck and threw him to the ground, defeated his Democratic opponent. Less than 24 hours after the incident, multimillionaire Greg Gianforte beat out singer and poet Rob Quist Thursday, upholding the Republican Party's 20-year lock on the state's only seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. On Wednesday, journalist Ben Jacobs of the British-based newspaper The Guardian tweeted that Gianforte just body-slammed me and broke my glasses at the candidate's campaign headquarters in the city of Bozeman. International Edition's Lori London talks to Courtney Ratch, advocacy director with the Committee to Protect Journalists.
We're deeply disturbed about the reports that a reporter was body-slammed or in any way physically attacked by a politician or, frankly, by anyone else. We understand that there are, you know, the Guardian reporter was allegedly assaulted, that there appeared to be several witnesses, and that this was done by someone who said that they were sick and tired of talking to you guys by, you know, which you have to assume they're talking about journalists. And I think it's important that, you know, authorities have to show that politicians will be held accountable for these types of attacks on journalists.
Are you seeing an uptick in situations like this, this anger toward journalists in general?
So I think it's hard to say whether there is an uptick or not, because frankly, there is no systematic documentation of these types of incidents in the United States, although there is a coalition of groups that will be launching a website later this year during the summer in order to document these types of incidents so that we can answer questions like that. But I do think that, you know, we are seeing more reports, but again, we don't have that systematic documentation. It does seem that the kind of vitriolic rhetoric, the labeling of journalists and media outlets as fake news or enemies of the people or the opposition is having a negative impact. And, you know, I personally don't recall hearing about many of these incidents in the past, although I have also seen some reporting today of, you know, academics and scholars who have tried to put this into a historical context. So, you know, it's hard to say at this point.
Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi referred to the president and the comments that he made on the campaign trail. Basically, she implied he was sort of giving the okay to this sort of behavior, that he was encouraging it. Do you agree with that?
I think that when we see top political leaders pillorying the press and targeting and attacking, verbally attacking specific journalists and media outlets by name, that it creates an environment in which such attacks might be perceived as more permissive. So we are very concerned about this. And, you know, there have been a lot of reports in the past few days, you know, an official who talked about using a sword against a journalist, or, you know, people who have said, oh, you know, we were only joking. But the fact is that, you know, threats, whether they're verbal and rhetorical, against journalists have a real impact. It sends a very negative signal. It sends a signal that these journalists are somehow not acting in the public interest. And it seems to create an environment in which attacks might become, you know, more permissible. And we are seeing that, you know, these sort of restrictions on journalists from gaining access, attempts to keep them from, you know, interviewing officials or getting close to them, and, you know, just this really negativity towards reporters who are just trying to keep the public informed. You know, a colleague of mine from the National Press Freedom Committee was kind of roughed up the other day at the FCC just trying to, you know, cover his beat. So, you know, we're concerned about these reports. We are obviously asking for authorities to follow up and show that anyone who attacks a journalist, especially when they're just trying to keep the public informed about issues of public interest, like an election, should be held accountable.
Why is it so critical that we protect our First Amendment rights and journalists' ability to be able to gain that access to inform the public?
A functioning democracy and an informed electorate depend on journalists and on the press to ensure that they are kept informed, but also to hold government officials and authorities to account. You know, journalists are the ones who are grinding away day after day, following the paper trail, you know, reading minutes, attending meetings, trying to get in front of these officials to make sure that the public has the information they need to make informed choices. So the First Amendment protecting freedom of expression and freedom of the press is really important because it is the right that enables the enjoyment of all of our other rights.
Courtney Ratch of the Committee to Protect Journalists. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Nilar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
As people all over the world are reeling from the bombing attack at the Manchester Arena in the UK, country artists are taking a stand. Nikki Strong of VOA One The Hits has more. So, Nikki, how are country artists responding to this tragedy?
Well, of course, many of them are taking to social media to offer prayers of support and express their outrage. So, for example, Brad Paisley tweeted, "Can't find the right words, just sadness, prayers are with Manchester." Dan and Shay wrote, "Concerts are supposed to be a place where people can go to escape the problems of this messed up world. Thoughts and prayers, hashtag Manchester." But they're not just tweeting and posting stuff on Facebook. Some artists are expressing their commitment to perform in the UK as well.
Aren't several country artists slated to perform in the UK in the upcoming weeks?
Exactly. So artist Brent Cobb, he was scheduled to perform May 23rd at the Deaf Institute in Manchester. That's the day after the bombing, because the bombing was on May 22nd. And he stated on Facebook, he said that after much consideration, they decided that the show will go on. And he also wrote, quote, "While we do not want to be insensitive to your tragedy, we refuse to let terrorism win. Our hearts break for your loss, and we will be there with you tonight to mourn and help heal. With love and many prayers, Brent." And then much later on, I saw him tweet, "Manchester, we did it together. Thank y'all." And then country group Cadillac 3, they also offered condolences to their UK fans, and they also confirmed that they will not be canceling their upcoming shows. June 11th, they will be performing at the Down Festival in Donington, England. And a fan begged them on Twitter not to pull out of the festival. They then wrote, quote, "We stand with y'all now, and we will be there in a couple of weeks." To, of course, you know, another fan responded, "Never doubted it for a second. See you there." And then Charles Esten, who will be on tour with other members of the cast of the TV show Nashville, he's scheduled to actually perform at the Manchester Arena, where the bombing took place, June 17th. And Tuesday morning, the day after the attack, he tweeted, "Sending prayers of love, strength, and healing from Nashville to Manchester. Soon we'll bring them in person." And I said, provided that the country allows it, they will be there. And of course, one fan, they responded, "Your beautiful words of love and support from Nashville mean everything to me and our country. Can't wait to see you." So these artists' determination to actually come and perform is really providing a lot of encouragement to their fans in the UK.
Yeah, very, very, very nice. Well, many country songs have also been inspired by tragedy to provide healing and encouragement.
Yes, and off the top of my head, I think about Alan Jackson, "Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning?" And that was inspired by 9/11. Very powerful song. Tim McGraw is another one, "If You're Reading This," which is a tribute to soldiers who lost their lives. That's a very healing song when I hear it. Garth Brooks, "The Change," inspired by the Oklahoma City bombing. And another song by Garth Brooks also comes to mind. I just recently played it. I think last week I played it on Country Hits. And it wasn't necessarily inspired by a specific tragic event, but I think it applies. And it's simply called "People Loving People."
Aw, how nice. Well, perhaps you know a song that can provide healing to those impacted by the attack. Feel free to let Nikki know. You can reach her on Twitter and Facebook at VOA1 The Hits. You can hear music from the aforementioned artists and more inside Country Hits with Nikki Strong on VOA1 as well. Thank you, Nikki.
You're welcome.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 22nd, a suicide bomber walked into a group of exiting concertgoers in Manchester, England, and blew himself up, killing 22 and injuring 64. Many victims were under the age of 16. The perpetrator was identified as Salman Ebedi, the son of Libyan refugees. Police have detained numerous men in connection with the attack, including Abadi's 23-year-old brother in Tripoli. The Greater Manchester Police are reporting that a woman was also arrested. British Prime Minister Theresa May raised the United Kingdom's terror threat up to its highest level of critical, meaning more attacks may be imminent. President Donald Trump expressed, on behalf of the people of the United States, his deepest condolences to those so terribly injured in this terrorist attack and to the families of the victims. "We stand in absolute solidarity with the people of the United Kingdom," he said.
"So many young, beautiful, innocent people living and enjoying their lives murdered by evil losers in life. I won't call them monsters, because they would like that term. They would think it's a great name. I will call them, from now on, losers, because that's what they are. They're losers."
This kind of terrorism that snuffs out the lives of innocent people in the most barbaric manner is what President Trump has been rallying countries to fight against. "Our society," he said, "can have no tolerance for this continuation of bloodshed. We cannot stand a moment longer for the slaughter of innocent people." And in this attack, it was mostly children. The terrorists and extremists and those who give them aid and comfort must be driven out from our society forever, said President Trump. This wicked ideology must be obliterated, and I mean completely obliterated. An innocent life must be protected. All civilized nations, said President Trump, must join together to protect human life and the sacred right of our citizens to live in safety and in peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.